It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I feel it in my soul. I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe.
I'm a survivor.
I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Auburn Undercover Podcast here on the 24/7 Sports Network. My name is Nathan King. I am joined today by a returning guest on the show. Been on here quite a few times over the last couple years because, Auburn and Georgia, they tend to play each other pretty often. First time talking basketball, I believe, on here. So Jordan Hill from Dogs 247, obviously many of you remember him as a former Auburn beat reporter at the OA News. Jordan, how have things been treating you as we get down here to the end of the regular season?
It's been great, Nathan. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a pretty interesting basketball season for Georgia, and then when you look at the conference as a whole. It's been really fun over here. And over here right now, it's kind of the calm before the storm because spring practice for football starts next week. So it's been pretty much a total focus on men's basketball for these last few months. It's definitely been a fun follow.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Georgia basketball obviously doesn't have the kind of attention overall that it would, that it wants over the next few years in the Mike White era, but you do a great job of covering the team. And like you said, giving it that attention that when football's not going yet, giving it the attention that, that it deserves, because it's been an interesting season for the Bulldogs. Of course, they've lost a lot of games of late. Auburn contributed to that. It's been like over here at Auburn, at least for the past few years, there's always a weird time of year right now because Auburn seems to usually start spring practice earlier than most schools. And so now you're in a situation where they're on a break right now. We had a couple days. And then when they come back next week, it's going to be the SEC tournament. And then their next 2 weeks are going to be potentially Auburn in the NCAA tournament. If they make the second weekend, it's like spring practice has become something for me. I don't know how you view it, but like, I mean, I kind of just take what I can, but you can't, I personally can't dive in as much to spring practice as I used to, just because usually Auburn's in the postseason, like for half of it. And I'm just not there usually.
Yeah, Georgia basketball doesn't present the same problems there, Nathan. But what I have learned truthfully is to maybe not put a ton on what I see in spring practice like maybe I used to. You'd see somebody break out and be like, oh, this guy's going to be a star. And it's like we are so far away from the start of the season even being here. So I think there is a piece of that. And I don't know if you feel this way, and I honestly hate feeling this way, but I dread spring games. Going to the spring game, it goes back to the point I was just making. You can only put so much stock into what you see, and you come out of these games and a lot of fans, and I get it, they're excited, it's been a few months since their team has played, but you have to understand there's only so much you can make out of what we're going to see once this this team plays itself before it goes off into the summer.
Yeah, I think like I listening to you talking about the spring game, I wonder too if that comes from the Georgia side of things where they have had so much success of late, and like you can point to a couple guys because you've seen so many guys develop so well in the program. Whereas Auburn is, obviously hoping to get back to championship contention, but like they're in a 3-year rut that is one of their worst stretches in the last few decades of the program. And so I'm not saying Auburn fans don't get excited in the offseason because they absolutely do, But in terms of like the wait and see element of things, I think Auburn fans have kind of conditioned themselves to think that way. Whereas I don't blame somebody as a fan of like a national contender for latching on to a player really early or latching on to, you know, oh, this position group is going to be really good, because they've seen it. Like they've seen it actually happen so many times over the years, whereas Auburn has struggled. And so, yeah, I wasn't at the spring game last year. I was on vacation. And then the year before, I actually wasn't there either. So it's going to be my first A-Day game in a little while. So in that element, I'm kind of excited for it. But I think the last one I was at, it was like super dreary and rainy. And it was like 45 degrees outside. And there were like a few hundred people there. So I feel like you run that risk. When it's a nice, like sunny spring day, like spring games can be a lot of fun. But you definitely run the risk of getting that spring weather sometimes, I think.
I'm trying to remember. I want to say I went to, and I was at a few A-Days while I was with the OA News, but I feel like I went to one time when I was still a preps reporter in Columbus at the Ledger Inquirer. And I feel like my big takeaway was like, Nate Craig Myers, this guy is going to be a big time playmaker. And unfortunately for Nate, it didn't happen, but it's one of those instances. Throwback. Yeah, I know. But it's one of those instances where, you know, a few years removed, you go, again, you know, we can only take so much from what we're going to see in that scrimmage.
I'm blanking on the name, but there was a walk-on running back who won A-Day MVP 2 years in a row. Oh, I was just talking about him the other day. Sometimes it matters, and then sometimes it doesn't. But we'll move on from talking about spring football. But so Auburn closes their regular season Saturday at home against Georgia. This was pretty favorable end to the regular season for Auburn. Really, when you look at their last three games of the year, Mississippi State is a good team that's going to make the tournament, but getting them at home, they haven't played well on the road all year. So that was nice for Auburn. They did to Missouri what most people have done to Missouri this season. I mean, just absolutely smashed them on the road, dropped over 100 points for the fourth time this season. And then this Georgia team, Jordan, we saw them just last Saturday, not this past Saturday, but the one before that, play Auburn. So I guess when you're looking at that, it's kind of difficult because I think it's difficult to kind of make a matchup comparison here and say that, I don't want to say Georgia doesn't stand any chance because they've played well against good teams at times this season. But for you, when you're looking at this game, when very recently there's a 21-point home loss to this team, what are some things that really kind of hinder Georgia in that game and maybe has hindered them recently that you'd like to see them get back on track to give themselves a chance for an upset in this game?
You know, it's kind of strange, Nathan. For the most part this season, when Georgia has played well, it's relied so much on the three-point shooting that it's decided, look, we're going to just shoot lights out. They have not shot well at all from the field in two-point range. I mean, I don't know what it is. For the most part, they just can't. Other than like Noah Thomas and their shooting guard, they really struggled to shoot inside the arc. But yeah, I mean, that has been a big piece of how they've attacked. And then on Tuesday when they played Ole Miss, Jabri Abdur-Rahim, who has been one of their better three-point shooters this season, he didn't play. He walked out during warmups, had a boot on his left foot. I still don't know. We're going to try to find out if he'll be available for Saturday. And I'm not sure if it was in part because Jabri wasn't available or maybe they just saw something in the scout of Ole Miss. But Georgia attacked completely different than I've seen them pretty much the entire season. They worked in the paint. They let Russell Chiwa work. Dylan James, who's a freshman forward, who has probably been the brightest spot of this stretch. I mean, they've lost 9 of their last 11. It has not been a very good close to the regular season. But they just attacked Ole Miss. They had 36 points in the paint. Russell Chiwa had a double-double. Dylan James, that was his first career start, and he was a rebound away from a double-double. So they went after Ole Miss, and it was huge. I mean, they wound up winning by 3, and Chiwa and Dylan James both had a lot to say in being able to win that game. Now, I say that to say they're not going to be able to have that kind of success against Auburn. I mean, with their size, with Janai Broome, that's not going to present itself. So does Georgia lean back on its three-point shooting? Now, Jabri is one of their better three-point shooters, but they have other guys that can shoot from deep. Blue Kane, who I think has been on a little bit of a cold streak. Noah Thomason has shown himself to be more willing to shoot from deep. He'd been kind of a mid-range jumper guy or a layup guy for most of this season. And Justin Hill, the backup point guard. So just what intrigues me the most, especially based off of how different Tuesday looked, how does Georgia try to attack this Auburn team? I would think that their three-point shooting is going to be the best chance, especially playing this game on the road, to have an opportunity. But, you know, going into that game, there were a lot of people on our message board saying, you know, Ole Miss just has such a big size advantage. I mean, you know, I think they got a guy that's like 7 foot plus, but that didn't really seem to throw Georgia off. They just went down and attacked, and credit to them, they really made the most of it.
Isn't that interesting about Ole Miss this season? I mean, Jamarian Sharp, I believe he's still, I think, is he 7 foot four, I think is what he comes in at. I think he's still top five nationally in block percentage. But in both of their games against Auburn this year, yeah, they have no interior defense. Like, he can block shots, but I forget who it was when they played them in Neville Arena. But you had Auburn's guards, like, just going at Jamarian Sharp, because it, basically if he can't swat your shot, then they can't do much to defend that. Yeah, I mean, that was – look, and also it was the last – I know if you're Mike White and you're Georgia, you're wanting to kind of, you know, leave a positive taste in your mouth when you can, and to win on your home floor in the last home game of the season, even with the distractions of the fire alarms, which I would like you to give your best anecdote possible about that if you can. But, yeah, I mean, that's obviously what you want to see from this team. Now – Even if they go and lose at Auburn, because I don't see many avenues, even if they do shoot the 3-point shot well, like Auburn's offense has been scoring. I mean, it'd be kind of surprising they didn't score like at least 90 points in this game. He scored 97 in Athens. This offense has been on fire over the last few games, and that's all, most of that's been away from home even. So it does seem like a difficult path for Georgia to win this game. But, you know, Jordan, how important is it for them not only just to compete here, but to get back on track and feel a little bit better about themselves in Nashville too? I mean, they'll have an opportunity in those. I think Georgia's a lot better than Vanderbilt. I think Georgia's a lot better than Missouri. I'm not going to like sit here and speculate the seeding right now, but I think they've got a good chance to play Missouri in the first game, if I'm not mistaken. And so, and after that, I think you've got an opportunity at the NIT, correct? And so I think, you know, how important is it for them to, you know, get off on the, you know, finish on the right foot here at the end of their season that didn't go as planned, but at the same time, you're still in a rebuild if you're Mike White, and you're still trying to trend upwards, you know, for year three and four, trying to be an SEC contender.
Yeah, the way it stacks right now, Nathan, and basically unless Arkansas beats Alabama, which is entirely possible on Saturday, it looks like Georgia will be playing Missouri, and I think that does set up well for them to be able to win that first game. And yeah, you know, I think that especially that Ole Miss win was much needed for Georgia. This was a team, and I've written about this. You know, Mike White did not shy away from saying before the season he thought this was an NCAA tournament caliber team, and they faded down the stretch, which is what they did last season. Mike's first season in Athens, it ends with six straight losses, and it was sort of a sense of, okay, you know, that was a pretty good first year. We've got a lot of things to do. We got pieces that we need to build on and improve on. And then this year, you added some really talented freshmen. For the longest time, it really just looked like the two guards, Silas Demery Jr. and Blue Kane. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, Dylan James has really come on and shown that he is capable of being an SEC caliber wing and a guy that's got a huge upside going forward. So you have those guys. But when you just saw the losses piling up, I mean, I think Georgia might have won one game in February. They beat Vanderbilt at Vanderbilt and was one of Georgia's better performances all season. You know, I think that was frustrating. I think on one side you could look at it and you look at like the scoring differential and just how close games were this past season compared to this one. And there's no denying Georgia's better. I mean, there were games last year. They played at Arkansas. They played at Alabama that were just massacres. I mean, it was like by the 10-minute mark of the first half, you're like, okay, this I'm going to go ahead and write my story, Nathan, because this is done. Like they're not in the same stratosphere as this team. They've been so much better this year. They've been so much more competitive. But I think that there's a frustration with some fans that close wasn't close enough. I mean, they had Tennessee on the ropes. I think they were up 11 with like 6 minutes left in Stegman Coliseum, and Tennessee comes back. They led Alabama pretty well into the second half, and then the Crimson Tide got going. Gave Florida two really good games, including one in Gainesville. Georgia was down 21. Came back and forced overtime, and then they just kind of ran out of gas. They couldn't keep it going. So there's definitely signs of progress, but it's one of those things where you would definitely help your cause if you can You know, play Auburn tight, you know, make it competitive on the road. Go win a game in the SEC tournament. It's been a few years since Georgia's done that. And then try to keep these freshmen on the roster. I mean, that's the biggest thing to me. You know, when you look at a rebuild in this era of college basketball and really just college athletics on the whole, the question is, well, can you keep that young talent? I mean, there's really nothing stopping these guys from going to the portal. I think if Georgia does that, Georgia fans should be really, really excited going into year three. But that's a big if. We don't really know what any of those three guys are going to do. And for that fact, you know, the rest of the roster. So it's going to be about roster retention and then going in and adding pieces around those guys. If Georgia is able to do that, I mean, I think that there is reason for excitement going into year three.
Yeah, and you've got, I mean, where does Asa Newell stand for them in terms of their best recruits recently and all time? Because I would have to think of late, Georgia hasn't gotten many five stars, but they're getting that one next year.
I believe he is third, but behind only some guy named Anthony Edwards. Not sure whatever happened to that guy. And Caldwell Pope, that's still in the league. So that is definitely a huge getting Asa Newell, a guy from Montverde that has got a lot of people excited. He's a guy that spent time in his childhood in Athens. I mean, it sets up well, but sort of, again, going back to that piece that I was just talking about, you need to have pieces around him. And if they get those young guys back, you should be really excited, but you've got to make the effort to keep those guys there. Otherwise, you know, you may have Asa out there and a lot of guys that are learning how to play on the SEC level, trying to get up to speed. And that's going to make the situation a whole lot harder.
Yeah, and I mean, look, all around the SEC, everyone seems to be investing more. I mean, the league is obviously as good. You know, regardless of how many bids get in, I think the fact that there was a possibility of a five-way tie at 13-5, like there was a possibility that a team that goes 13-5 was going to be left out of the top four. I think just, you know, kind of the high end ceiling of the league, I think is probably the best it's ever been. So a lot of teams, it's interesting to me right now to look at, you know, from an Auburn perspective where it feels like they are sort of established in that top rung and it's probably going to take until Bruce Pearl retires for them to move out of it. It's interesting to look at the teams that want to break into that. And they're really trying to break into it with the same formula that Auburn did a few years ago. Go hire what you believe is a really good coach. In the case of Georgia, in the case of somebody, you know, Ole Miss, or Chris Beard, those are just a couple. They've hired coaches who have proven they can take teams to the tournament. It's just about roster building now. And I think a point you made when you and I were talking this week is important about these rebuilds is that it's not apples to apples with what Bruce Pearl did at Auburn. Because year four at Auburn, they won an SEC regular season championship. It was a really good formula of, hey, just build up some experienced guys. Once they got a couple five, well, not even a five-star, Mustafa Heron wasn't a five-star. Once they got a couple really good recruits, it was like, all right, that is now your talent ceiling starts to get pushed. It's not apples to apples because of that exact reason you just talked about. It was only a few years ago, but the transfer poaching and the transfer and NIL market that kind of go hand in hand were not a thing. And even the top-level programs have to deal with that. Bruce Pearl talked about it. He said multiple SEC teams came and told Dylan Cardwell, their backup center, that he could come start for them this season. And if you're a coach, you know, there's that, both ends of it is what you're going to work with all offseason. And so, I agree with you. I'm interested to see not only at Georgia, but these other programs, too, that are like, all right, we made some progress. I mean, Ole Miss is – they definitely fell off. They were never a tournament team, in my opinion, but they were a lot better. They were a lot better than people thought they'd be. LSU had he's probably going to win 9 games. They won 2 last year in the league. How sustainable is this? I think it starts with that offseason roster management, like you mentioned.
And I think a piece of it, too, with our jobs, you know, it kind of changes, like, if you're following a rebuild, you know, how you write about it. Because we were having this conversation with some of the other writers. You know, if you're taking out the portal – and just going back to before, where it's like, yeah, guys can transfer, but they got to sit out a year. You know, a lot of what I'd be writing would be like, hey, you know, very tough end of this season, but you've got your backcourt. You've got Silas Demery and you've got Blue Kane. And then look at this wing you got, Dylan James, and you're adding a five-star. Man, there is a lot of reason for excitement. And I say that to say, you know, it could wind up playing out that way. You know, those guys may stick around and that would be huge for Georgia, but it's not a guarantee. And, you know, when you look at Georgia standing as a basketball program in its history, I mean, in my lifetime, I'm 29 years old. They've never really mattered. I mean, honestly, since Tubby Smith left for Kentucky, they've never really truly been a contender. They had blips here and there. You know, it's I can see it being very easy for other coaches to say, look, come here. You're going to be part of a winner. You know, maybe if you stay at Georgia, you can win. But if you go to one of these bigger programs, you got a better shot at it. Very fascinated. I've written this in the last week or so. To me, this offseason is going to determine the Mike White era because, again, like we're saying, the pieces are there and they've proven that they can play SEC basketball. Now the question is, can you keep them in Athens?
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Yeah, and I don't know what kind of player Kenny Johnson would have been at Georgia, but he was a good recruit. He was a top 150 recruit. And decided after 1 year there, obviously that was back when Tom Crean was the coach, but decided 1 year there he was just going to go to Auburn, which, as we've seen many times, was his number two in recruiting. Walker Kessler did the same thing. Like Auburn was his number two in recruiting. That matters more and more moving forward. Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting right now. And like you said, that base of, okay, we've got our freshman who took these nice steps. Yeah, I just think back, not to bring everything back to like the early Auburn years, but like, you know, going into that Final Four season, there were so many, and even they won the SEC the year before. It's not like they weren't, like they were coming off a high, but you had reasons to be like, well, Chuma Okeke was a freshman, but man, did he show some flashes, you know? So it's like, how good of a player can he become? And then I always go back to, and you remember these guys a little bit, but like, because Dangell Purifoy and Austin Wiley were had to sit out with the NCAA investigation, and you said, you know, sitting out a transfer reminded me of Samir Dowdy. Auburn's scout team that year consisted of those three guys. All three of those guys were starters, or Samir Dowdy was your sixth man. Two of those guys were starters the next year. And so, yeah, I mean, you had that reason to believe in the next season, and there wasn't really the transfer mindset. There wasn't the, you know, seeking more money, tampering, all that stuff that they have to deal with right now. And so, you know, more than just Georgia, I am interested to see, because I think a lot of teams have an opportunity to take another step next year. I guess let's talk a little bit about the league as well as we get closer. There's only one game left of the regular season. Looking to Nashville, by the way, to Auburn fans listening to this, I wrote on Thursday about the fact that Auburn controls its destiny for a top four seed now. They have Tennessee to thank for that. If South Carolina had won that game on Wednesday, they're now a game up on you, and you're sitting in that situation where there's not enough room in the top four. But now, because of the way the tiebreakers work, and you always have a conditional tiebreaker over South Carolina, in this situation, if you beat Georgia, you're in, and you're in the top four. Now, your first round matchup is probably going to be Florida if all the favorites win. And that is somebody nobody wants to play right now. And that game would be the 9:30 tip off on Friday night in Nashville. So it's probably the very last thing you'd want. So we'll see how things play out. But, you know, Jordan, talking about Tennessee a little bit, I remember like just a couple weeks ago, you looked at the SEC title race and you were like, man, Tennessee's in it, I know, and they're the best team in the league, but like the way that their final stretch goes, playing maybe the four other best teams in the league, including two on the road, it's like, man, they're gonna have to really earn this thing if they go and win it. They win the outright title a game before the last game in the regular season. I'd be surprised if they're not a one seed in the tournament at this point. I mean, they are definitely playing like one. And it's crazy, too, that this is their first outright title since 2008. That just goes to show how difficult it is to win that. But I think, you know, this is not going to end up as one of the seasons where the team that wins the regular season championship is maybe argued as not the best team. I think Tennessee has been the best team in the league all year long, and they get a banner to prove it.
Yeah, you know, that was – I want to say they were the preseason pick there at Media Day there in Birmingham. I know that was the team that I thought had a lot of potential. And I still can't get over the Dalton Kinect thing because, you know, when they added him, I mean, he was, what, from Northern Colorado. I don't remember when they added him a whole lot of hoopla about it. I remember the first time I really heard about him was in that game I had mentioned earlier when Tennessee played at Georgia. It was like he just decided, like, oh, we're down and we're running out of time. Okay. And he just, like, turned it on. And he was a big reason why Tennessee got out of Stegman with a win. To me, and I'd have to look around, you know, the rest of the country, but Tennessee is the team I may feel the best about, you know, period in college basketball as far as making a run. And I think something that I learned during my time there at Auburn covering men's basketball, you know, at the end of the year, you want to look at the conference standings. But at the same time, you kind of have to balance it with who's playing their best basketball. I mean, an example is I look at Alabama right now. You know, it seems like they're kind of struggling trying to find their footing. And yeah, I think they're like fourth or fifth in the league right now. But how much confidence do you really have in that team at this point in the year? You know, there's sort of a balancing act that comes with that. And I mean, super, super impressed with Tennessee. I feel like for the longest time, I kind of leaned on the, well, you know, Rick Barnes, he can't get out of that first weekend. I mean, they're good during the regular season. They never keep it up. I feel like they kind of have shaken that in the last few years, and I think it's well timed because they are super, super talented, and I think the Vols have a chance to really, one, like you said, be a number one seed, but I think actually do some damage with it.
When you mentioned playing well at the end of the year, even just beyond, you know, like wins and losses, because you look at, like in Auburn's case, they're thinking, they would like to think, since that Kentucky loss, even though you have a Tennessee loss mixed in there, you went and scored 84 on the road. Now your quality of opponent is going to go up a bunch because other than Tennessee, you really haven't played some of the top teams in the league of late. But I think that's probably the biggest reason, because you hear coaches talk about the SEC tournament, and historically they're right. It doesn't matter that much for seeding. Like Auburn was a 5 when they made that run and beat Tennessee in Nashville. They were a 5 seed going into the week. They ended up as a 5 seed in the tournament and that was a great Tennessee team. That was a really, really good Tennessee team that I believe made the Sweet 16. Yeah, they made the second weekend that year. And so it doesn't do a bunch. You know, I think it's all situational. Like Auburn's only got one quad one win right now. You beat somebody like Florida, you get another one. Is that the difference between the 4 and the 5 line? Probably not. Like that's pulling a lot of weight for just for an entire, you know, seeding movement. But like you said, I think it's more important to feel like you're playing well there, because we saw it a couple years ago too. Like Auburn was the 1 seed with Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler, but when they played a good team in the last month of the year, people were starting to figure out that offense. They go and have a clunker against Texas A&M, can't score at all. 2 games later, and they beat Jacksonville State like a drum, of course. But then they play good defense in Miami in the round of 32 and just get absolutely clapped in that game. And so, you know, I think it's not the end of the world if Auburn doesn't win a game in Nashville. Like, it's not. Last year they didn't win one, and then they went to the tournament, beat Iowa, and then were up 10 at halftime on Houston. So, like, it's not the end-all, be-all. I would love to kind of look at the relation there between making a run and actually doing something in March Madness. But I do think maybe this is a team that would like to continue that offensive success In Georgia's case, I mean, they're pretty much an NIT lock at this point, right? Like,
It's going to be hard to tell. And what's funny is what might wind up happening is that they might have hurt their chance to make the NIT by beating Ole Miss because, you know, the new NIT rule, the top two teams from each of those major conferences get locked in. Well, they may have knocked Ole Miss completely off the NCAA bubble and slotted them in there. So I wouldn't say never with them making the NIT. But I do think that that has kind of complicated things with A&M also kind of hanging there. So I do think that that would be a step in the right direction if Georgia was able to get into the NIT. But I think they're close to the last couple the last month and change has put them in a tough spot as far as trying to make the NIT.
Yeah, it's a good point. I didn't really think about that of like your fringe SEC teams at the end of the day that because I don't think it, you know, A&M – and it's probably closer than Ole Miss, but like, no, I don't think it's going to happen for them. And then Ole Miss, I think, is completely off at this point. But like, yeah, if you're right on the cusp, then you become the top seeds in the the CBI as well. I mean, that's kind of your next selection, right? It's just been a minute since Auburn has been a part of that. Do you think they would take a selection for that, or would they? I know a lot of teams kind of just push that off and they're like, we just moved the offseason.
It's hard to say. I would think they probably would not, but I think it probably just depends. It probably depends a lot on if they think some of those younger guys are coming back, because I would say if you felt really confident, it's like, hey, let's roll the ball out and get these guys a little bit more experience. But if I were a betting man, if it came down to the CBI, I don't think Georgia would play in it.
Well, especially now, I mean, I think the transfer portal opens the day after Selection Sunday, right? So in a coach's eyes, like that is going to be way more important, even maybe so that, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised nowadays. You've always seen people turn down the NIT, but maybe even more so now because of just how important that is. It's going to be crazy. I mean, we've seen it in college football every year where, you know, that people tweet out the transfer portal numbers and they just balloon every single year and they get bigger. Wouldn't be surprised with that at all, because Auburn is in a situation where like Jahni Broome's probably going to turn pro. I'd be really, really surprised. And that's just a black hole on their roster. Like they didn't get Florian Badunga, the 5-star. He's going to Kansas. And so like they have no Dylan Cardwell could come back. Like he's not a starting SEC. Well, some other teams apparently thought he was, but Auburn doesn't want him to be their starting center. And so it's like Auburn's in a situation where while they're preparing, they think they're a second weekend team. While they're preparing to try to make the second weekend, Bruce Pearl is also going to be calling every high quality center in the portal, because that's who Auburn's going to try to get. They're going to be like, look at Walker Kessler, look at Jahni Broome, come in here and just do that. It's got to be a crazy time of year. At least it's a little better than college football, it feels like, in terms of the calendar. But man, I mean, we're going to start to see it here in about a week where it's going to get pretty wild.
And that's the problem that Georgia is going to run into, and it sort of ran into this past season. I would say Russell Chiu has been a pretty good center, but they're going to go in. They don't have a 5 on the roster. They've got Frank Anselm eBay, but, I mean, he's been a reserve. He's not a guy that I think they're ready to say we can count on him. But they're going to go in needing a center, and then you've got teams like Auburn who, you know, you can pretty much count on to be in the NCAA tournament every year, also needing help at that position. It just makes – you know, if you're going to try to build through the portal, if you're a team of Georgia's caliber, you know, you're chasing with some of the big boys. You know, you've got to convince somebody that, hey, I'm going to turn down this opportunity to maybe try to go build something at Georgia. It's a tall task.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be, I don't know if it's going to define the offseason. I mean, a lot of things will change. But it certainly did. I mean, when they got Walker Kessler, that's certainly what put him over the top that year. And then the next season when they got Jahni Broome, I mean, last year he was pretty good. This year he is maybe a second team All-American. And so it's like that can really, really have a big effect on you. I just think nobody, maybe in college basketball, and I'm obviously not as well-versed in everybody else, but if he is a second team All-American, I just don't know. I don't know about the pick of the litter is the right word, but like, you just had two straight All-American transfer centers and you need another one. And you're like, dude, this job's all yours. Like, we've got a veteran guy who's going to spell you and he's great, but like, you will be our starting center. And we just had two straight All-Americans. And so I'll be interested to see what the market looks like, because there's also one guy every year a handful of guys every year in the portal that nobody expected to enter. Kind of surprising that they entered, and usually they end up making a big difference at their next program. Yeah, I mean, I'll be obviously you will, but I'll be keeping an eye on that Georgia roster too, because it's just you like to have that, you know, a rebuilt roster to pair with somebody like Asa Newell, a five-star. But you know, you brought up KCP and Anthony Edwards. They were the classic case of like, there's nobody else. They were awesome, but those Georgia teams probably had what, like 8 combined SEC wins between those couple seasons, and so you'd hate for that to be the case for Asa Newell too.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the big thing, and you know, looking at that rebuild, it's like, again, can you tell me anything that Georgia did while Anthony Edwards was there? I think they might have beat Auburn one time, but that
was that the 2-16? Maybe I'm wrong.
They finished his year, they finished 13th in the SEC, so next to last. I can't remember what their record was, but they beat Memphis in non-con, and I think they might have stolen a game against Auburn, and like that was it. So like, what, you know, you got to make sure that you set those guys up for success, because now, not only, you know, let's just say Asa Newell just has an incredible freshman year. Not only do you have to worry about, okay, he's one and done, he's going pro, but there's just what we've talked about a good bit on this podcast, he could go to the transfer portal. So, I mean, like, you need to set those guys up to have team success, because, you know, you look at the numbers and you're like, oh, well, man, look at his points per game. Well, maybe a lot of it was because he had to do the scoring. You know, maybe, you know, that's not – I think that's something, too, the more you cover basketball that I've learned. It's like, keep the numbers in context. Like, why are they leaning so much on him? Or why is this guy shooting – you know, if a guy is shooting whatever percent from three-point range and it's outrageous, it's like he probably should be shooting more. That number shouldn't be, you know, as high as it is. Yeah. Again, keep the numbers in context, because sometimes it's you know, if you look at them the right way, they're telling you a pretty clear story about what's going on.
Yeah, and just even speaking of Georgia's transfer, big Russell Chiwa, correct? Chiwa, correctly. Yeah, I remember that was a guy you were interested to see how he would fit all the way back when he was added. And I think he had 11 points in the second half against Auburn. I remember there was when Georgia kind of brought it within 4 or 5 points. I remember he was just going at Broome, and he was scoring. So I'll be watching that matchup. Jani Broome is an interesting case because it is, I think, the perfect example of when you see other — you're talking about the numbers — when you see other college basketball numbers and you look at all these players that have been really awesome all year long, and then you watch them every single game and you realize, these guys aren't perfect. Like, this is not an NBA player. Jani Broome is nowhere near a perfect player, but you have to realize that's what everyone else in college basketball is as well, when you compare them to literally the entire rest of the country, all 350 other teams and their players. The fact that Jani Broome like rolls out of bed and gets 13 and 10 and 3 blocks, and then usually has a lot more than that and usually can affect the game more than that, it's like, no, that's rare. That's uncommon. It's just, you are watching him every possession. You're like, oh man, that big guy just backed him down. Well, he's 0-3 from 3. And it's like, well, yes, these are not NBA players. They're going to have a few, you know, lulls during games. But I think that's, you know, his free throw shooting is so much better. I just think back to last year, they lost that second round game, not entirely because of his free throw shooting, but like, he went 6-16 in a game that was really close throughout. And so as important as guard play is, and as well as Auburn shooting the past few games, which is very important going into the postseason, I just think he needs to be a dog for them to make it to the second weekend. Him and Jalen Williams, and they have the potential to do it. But just, you know, those are a couple guys who have done so much for this program, Jalen Williams in particular. I do think they're going to need them to be big in order to make it to the second weekend. But I'm interested to see what's going to happen in the SEC. And I feel like Kentucky is super capable of making a run because they're Kentucky. They're also playing really well. Florida's probably been the most underrated team in the league maybe all year long, but now they're maybe getting the recognition they deserve. That's absolutely a team that can make it to the second weekend. And you even mentioned Alabama. Like, you know, things are kind of clunky right now. Then go out and hit 16 threes in a game. Like, no one can do it better than them in that regard. I have questions about maybe their front court and how that's going to match up in the tournament. But it's gotten to a point where it is really, really exciting to start March Madness if you're a fan of SEC basketball, because there's so many, I guess, pieces to keep track of, and so many teams you feel like can make a run. I wouldn't be surprised if there are 3 or 4 teams from the SEC that make the second weekend this year.
Definitely. And Florida, I think, is a team that I'm kind of, that might be my sneaky pick to like make a run. I really like what they've done. And I just think it's so drastic. And you hear it from guys like Bruce Pearl, like Mike White, who have been in the conference for a while. Just think about how drastically different this is compared to like a decade ago. And my example that I always bring up, I think it was Mark Fox's third team at Georgia. It was either his second or his third. They finished tied for second in the SEC. They did not make the NCAA tournament.
Good.
So just think about, and deservedly so, not really like, oh, this is a really good team. It was like Kentucky and everyone else playing for second. And to be fair, I think the team that finished third got in, you know, they had a better resume than Georgia, but like, just imagine that in 2024, you know, it will never happen again like it did back then.
Yeah, and because we were talking about before, it's literally just because the quality of the league is so much higher. And that comes from, like, the analytics. That comes from the numbers. That, like, you look at the net ratings. There are plenty of teams that, like, they're not even going to sniff the tournament from the SEC. You know, I think A&M's still, like, a top 55 team in the net. And, like, they're going to be in the NIT. Ole Miss has been up there all year long. The numbers love Mississippi State. Mississippi State's almost a quad one game for Auburn. Now, they're a tournament team. But it's just like in the SEC, you're going against either a tournament team almost every night or a team that the numbers really, really like because they're competing against other good teams every game. I mean, like Auburn's resume, when you look at it, maybe from the outside, I mean, still 1-7 in quad one games. No one else in the top 30 of the net has only one. The next team in the net rankings that only has one quad one win is Indiana State. So it's kind of jarring when you look at that comparison. You know, the quadrant system is not an exact science. But then you look at the fact that they've won every single game by double digits. Only one team has blown them out all year long. And so it's like when you really dive into the resumes for each team, some teams have like the nice quad one wins and they have really good non-conference resumes and they play, you know, UNC and Kansas and Arizona and Purdue. Like Alabama schedules really, really highly in the non-conference. But I feel like Auburn just does this every year where it's like, in the non-con, they schedule like highly rated quad twos and they just beat the doors off of them. And then the SEC, they win like 12 or 13 games. And it's like you're saying, a few years ago, that maybe wouldn't have been a tournament team. But now 13 or 14 or 12 SEC games, like there is no chance that team is not gonna make the tournament. It's evident with somebody like South Carolina, like their non-con isn't very good at all, but they had a resurgence season in the league and they're gonna be like a 5 or a 6 seed in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes for a very fun year. And I think that sort of adds to, you know, Georgia fans wanting to see them take a step forward. It's like everybody else is right there and the league is so competitive. And again, to what we talked about a little earlier, I would, you know, stand up and like totally agree with what Mike White has said, that this team is better than last year. But, you know, you're looking at, unless you beat Auburn, you're going to have the same number of wins in the regular season. You're going to have the same number of conference wins. You know, you need to take that a step forward. But, yeah, I mean, I love this time of year, Nathan. I don't know if you get into it with brackets and all that, but I just think it's going to be a very exciting March Madness, a very exciting NCAA tournament. And, again, there's a number of SEC teams I would not be surprised make a deep push once we get to that point.
All year long on Auburn, I've kind of thought – not that they're like infallible to matchup like disadvantages, because they're not. I mean, the Florida game was like, ooh, that team is built to beat you, and they're built to beat you pretty good. But I just think a team that plays really high level defense every night, shooting better, and has a couple scorers in the front court that they can just rely on. I think this team is built to potentially go to the second weekend. It's interesting to like, I would love to like get, you know, sit down with, you know, somebody like Bruce Pearl or any other coach and like talk about what is a realistic expectation for a team, because you would never talk about that during the season, but you read between the lines all year long. And they've been saying since the offseason, the reason they've been so frustrated when they haven't played to their potential is because they all believe like, no, this team's special. And like, they have a little bit of a different gear, maybe than even some other Auburn teams. It's not been their all season long, but it's been their most games, because you've beaten every team by double digits in the win column and you've only lost by double digits in one game. And so, yeah, you're right. It'll be really, really exciting to see how that goes. It's going to start in Nashville next week in the SEC tournament, which is also always a good time. It's a little bit different of a beast there. I do wonder about the potential for somebody like Kentucky to go on a run there. Tennessee's obviously playing really well. And then Auburn is, if Auburn can get past that first game, like I think if it is Florida, Auburn matches up pretty well. Even like if they see Kentucky again, it's like, I thought they matched up well against Kentucky in that first game. You just had your worst shooting game in Neville Arena in the last 11 years. And so it's like, okay, you're probably not going to do that again. So you might have an opportunity there. So should be really, really interesting. Obviously, Auburn and Georgia close out their regular season on Saturday. It's a game Auburn's got to have if they want a top four seed in the SEC tournament. It'll also be senior night as well. Bunch of guys who've given a lot to the program will be recognized. And so, Jordan, thank you so much for joining us today, giving lots of insight about the Bulldogs. I know Auburn fans always kind of keep one eye over on their rivals, and Georgia, in my opinion, has just been an interesting case because they have a coach who has done really, really well in his career, and I feel like they have the tools to succeed. You know, if Auburn can do it, why not Georgia? Like, they're basically very comparable programs there in terms of their basketball history. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens going into the offseason of year three of the Mike White era. But we'll see what goes on first Saturday at 5:30 Central Time in Neville Arena on SEC Network. Go check out Jordan and all his Georgia coverage over at Dogs 247. If you guys want to read up on their side of the preview of the game, you can do that over there. If you guys enjoyed the show, go leave us a 5-star review. It's the number one thing that helps us out. The bumper music is by Beats by Mordecai. Twitter, SoundCloud, and Instagram is where you can find him until the next episode. Probably have one at the end of the weekend talking about Auburn's SEC tournament seeding and beyond. We will catch you guys later. Everybody have a good weekend. Talk to y'all soon.
Normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.